Hello, my name is Peshi Neuberger. Welcome to Torati Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today, we will be studying Sefer Tehillim, Perek Kuf Tet Zayin, 116. One of the first things that strikes you about this Perek is what a stark contrast it is to the one which precedes it. Perek Kuf Tet Vav, 115, is expressed by a plural entity, Lo lanu Hashem, not for us Hashem, velokeinu bashamayim, and our God is in the heavens, v'anachnu nevarechka, and we will bless Hashem, and to a plural entity, Beit Yisrael, the whole house of Israel, Beit Aaron, the house of Aaron, haktanim im hagdolim, the lesser people with the greater people. It's very much a psalm of the nation, of the community. Psalm 116, Mizmor Kuf Tet Zayin, on the other hand, is intensely personal, with a stream of I and me and minds filling its verses, which suggests that it began as a personal tefillah, a personal prayer of David HaMelech, and was later included in Halel HaMitzri, the Egyptian Halel, because in some way its message was relevant to our national prayer of praise and thanksgiving. Whenever we look at a personalized, in this case it's almost intimate, mizmor, it's helpful to try and pinpoint the moment in David HaMelech's life which compelled him to write it, and then to imagine the feelings which must be etched into the mizmor as a result. Very often, our mefarshim pick up the context clues and help us out. Keeping that in mind, let's zero in on the pshat first of the beginning of the perek. David HaMelech begins by expressing his gratitude for Hashem listening to his stuff. Psukim 1 and 2. Ahavti ki yishma Hashem et koli tachnonai. Listen to the intimate voice here. I love it when God listens to me, to my voice and my beseeching. Ki hi ta'az no li, when he inclines his ear to hear me. Uvi amayakra, and I call out on all kinds of days, good days, bad days, regular days. He moves on to 3 and 4, apparently recalling a terrible time where there seemed to be no way out. Afafuni chevle mavet, utsareim sha'ol mitza'uni. I was surrounded by the pains of death, and the straits, the narrow confines of the grave found me. Tzaravi agon emtsa, I confronted distress and sadness. Uvashem Hashem ekra, and I reacted by calling out to God. And this is what I said. Ana Hashem, maltanafshi, please God, save my soul. In 5 and 6, he moves to thank God for doing just that. Chanun Hashem, v'tzadik, velokeinu mirachem. God is gracious and righteous, and our God is compassionate. Shomer p'taim Hashem. Hashem watches, guards the foolish. Daloti, I went really down. I was in the abyss, the bottom of the barrel, v'li hoshia, and he helped me. He saved me. David now turns to his soul and says, Shuvi nafshi limnu chaychi. Return my soul to your resting place, to your relaxed state. No cause for stress anymore. Ki Hashem gamal aleichi, because Hashem has acted compassionately with you, kindly with you. And then he turns directly to God and acknowledges that this salvation came from him. Ki chilatzta nafshi mimavet, because you extricated my soul from death. Et eini min dim'ah, my eyes from tears. Et ragli midechi, my feet from stumbling. Et halich lifnei Hashem, verse 9, ba'artzot hachayim. I will walk before God in the land of the living, referring either to this world where we live, to the next world where life is eternal, or to the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael, where life realizes its fullest meaning. Now it would make perfect sense to move on to the finale. Ma'ashiv l'Hashem kol tagmulai alai. How can I repay Hashem all his kindness he has extended to me? I know, I will raise the cup of salvation and call out in Hashem's name, just as I did before when I was in trouble. Now I will raise it out of triumph. The problem is, Psukim Yud and Yud Aleph, verses 10 and 11. They are an interlude here which do not seem to flow and which are very hard to understand. And this is how they read. He'emanti ki adaber, I believed when I spoke. Ani aniti ma'od, I was very low down and troubled. Ani amarti b'chavzi, I said in my frenzied haste, kol ha'adam kozev, all of man is false. What is he talking about? What haste? When was he low down? What did he say that he believed? The classic commentators deciphered this non sequitur in a variety of ways. Radak and Mitzudat Zion understand it as David HaMelech taking a moment to assure us of his steadfast faith, even when all seemed lost, and implicitly encouraging us to do the same. Ha'emanti ki adaber. I had absolute emuna when I spoke up. Ani aniti ma'od. I was in a very low point. Ani amarti b'chavzi. Nevertheless, in that panicked state, b'chavzi, I said to all those people who tried to convince me to get up and smell the coffee that there was no way I was ever going to become king, I said to them, Ko ha'adam kosev. All you guys, you are liars. What you say is false. Ma'ashiv la'Hashem kol tag mulay alai. How can I repay you, Hashem? He has vindicated my belief in him by showering me with everything I told them I would get. But Rashi takes the opposite approach, and at first blush, it's very surprising. He offers two possible events as the ones which are associated with these two mysterious psukim, and each one can only be understood by reviewing its backstory. Let's look at the first one. When Shaul and Yonatan fall on the Plishti battlefield, Yonatan leaves behind a five-year-old son named Mephibosheth and his nursemaid. She, realizing that he may be in mortal danger as an heir who might get in the way of anybody who wants to assume the throne, she carries him away in a frenzied haste. He falls and becomes crippled. When David becomes king, he is committed to being faithful to the pact of loyalty that Yonatan and he had entered. And he does this in three different ways. He returns to Mephibosheth, the field of his grandfather Shaul. He has Mephibosheth sit at his table as if he were a prince. And he places Tziva, a former servant of Shaul, at the service of Mephibosheth, together with Tziva's many children and servants, who now all belong to this young Mephibosheth. Tziva, who is probably not excited about this and always looking to be emancipated, finds an opportunity to slander Mephibosheth. After David's return to Yerushalayim from his war with Avshalom, Avshalom is now dead, but the people who were with him are still at large, and David is still in quite a panic. But on his way back, Tziva comes to greet him, holding out a gift. David sees him and asks after Mephibosheth, to which Tziva responds, Mephibosheth, he's in Yerushalayim, kind of waiting to be coronated now that Avshalom is dead and no longer stands in his way to the throne. At which point, feeling thoroughly betrayed, David HaMelech does not verify the story, but in extreme anger proclaims that all of Mephibosheth's property now is being transferred to Tziva. Back to Psalms 116, Kuftet Zion, Rashi translates as follows. Ha'emanti ki adaber. I believed the words of Tziva regarding Mephibosheth when I spoke up and said to him, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is now yours. Ani aniti ma'od. I had been so brought down to a low state. I had been so humbled. I was so lowly. After all, I had seen so many of Bnei Yisrael betray me. My own son wanted to kill me. It was entirely plausible that Mephibosheth too would be a traitor, despite my kindness to him. And so, ani amarti b'chavzi, I said in my frenzy, as I was fleeing from Avshalom or Avshalom's camp at this point, ko ha'adam kozev, every human being is a liar, false, a betrayer, even Mephibosheth. Ma'ashiv la'Hashem. But now, let's translate not as repay, but what can I respond? Ashiv also means respond. What can I respond to Hashem? I'm embarrassed at having made a rash decision about a human being, which turned out to be wrong. I judged him unfairly. Rashi offers a second opinion, for which we need to review a different backstory. This one took place before David became king of Israel, although he had secretly been anointed by Shmuel HaNavi as the future king. He came out into the public arena and he excelled in all aspects of leadership. He was charming, courageous, good-looking, spiritually endowed, and he very quickly won the admiration and love of the Jewish people, save one, his father-in-law, King Shaul, who was jealous and pursued him almost to the death. There were numerous near misses, but maybe the closest call happened at a place in the desert called Sela HaMachlokot. David had been hiding in the desert to avoid his father-in-law's clutches for a while. The local Ziphim, people of Ziph, found out about his whereabouts, and in an attempt to ingratiate themselves with the king, they informed Shaul. Shaul proceeded to close in on David with thousands of men, while David only had 600. David had hidden at that rock, hoping that it would offer him some shelter, but Shaul's men practically encircled him. And the Navi explains, "Vayehi David nechpaz lalechet." David was in a frenzied, panicked haste to get around this situation, but it was a lost cause. And suddenly, vayavo hamalach, an angel, actually means a messenger, but it was an angelic messenger, came to tell Shaul that the Plishtim had attacked Israel. Being still, at points, a responsible king, this thoroughly distracted him. He left his personal vendetta, went back to fight the enemy, leaving David and his men wholly intact. Now, we can read this interlude, still as an apology for a lapse of trust, just on a different circumstance. I believed what I said because I was in such a low place of betrayal and it seemed clear that I would die without ever assuming the throne. I said in my panic, all men are liars. Even a man like Shmuel HaNavi, who promised that I would be king, even he is untrue because I'm not going to be king. I'm going to be dead. In this case, it is clear that the strongest connection is the word bechavzi, ani amarti bechavzi, I said in my frenetic haste, which is reminiscent of vayehi David nechpaz lalechet, and David was in a frenetic, frenzied haste as he tried to get around the situation at Sela HaMachlokot. It is not a commonly used word in Sefer Shmuel or in Tehillim, and the fact that it is used here suggests to Rashi that perhaps it is on this event that it was written. Malbim doesn't want to limit himself to one event. He sees these two psukim that break the flow, not necessarily specific to one event, but perhaps to many events in which David HaMelech was in a panicked haste. He translates these two psukim philosophically and says, "Ha'emanti, I believe ki adaber, that which I am about to proclaim. Ani aniti ma'od, I have been, on many occasions, in a very low place, very diminished as a human being. Ani amarti b'chavzi, and at those times in my desperate frenzy, I said, kol ha'adam kozev, all of mankind, all of humanity is nothingness. It's false. The illusion that there is real substance and value to a human being, that his accomplishments and deeds are significant, it's just that. It's an illusion. It is untrue because he will end up in the grave having nothing to show for his life, nothing worthwhile. But now I see that I was wrong. There is hope, and I proclaim that man is not nothing. There is hope and reward, and human experience is not futility, and that is what I believe." Rashi and Malbim both see this statement as an almost embarrassed apology for having had a lapse of faith. For us, this is empowering because it allows us to feel that we are in very good company when we have similar lapses, and to remind ourselves, particularly when we are required to say Hallel but are not really feeling in our personal lives in a Hallel sort of mood, that sometimes things are not exactly as they seem. And even when they are very bad, in the 11th hour, there can be a turnaround. Things can change on a dime. So don't despair ever of singing Hallel with a full heart. Next time, we will continue with Hallel by studying the shortest perek in all of Tanakh, Mizmor Kuf Yud Zayin 117. Good things, we will see, come in small packages. Thank you for studying together Le'ilui Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Tzvi Yosef.